All right, we're going to look at the rejection of Samson, or Samson's rejection. If you'll remember last week, Judges, chapter 13, 14, part 13, chapters 14 and 15. We're going to cover two chapters tonight, so we're going to have to hurry if we're going to cover two chapters. But I want to cover both of these chapters, and I'm not going to deal with every individual verse. That's not been our intention since we began the book of Judges. Our intention has been to look at imperfect leaders whom God raised up at the perfect time. The whole purpose behind this is so that you can see the goodness of God in the leaders that we have today. Because you're not going to find any perfect leaders today. And I'm sick and tired. I mean sick and tired of Baptists in America thinking they're voting for their next Sunday school teacher or their next pastor every time they go to the polls. You're not going to find a man that's biblically qualified to be your pastor who's going to be running for office. If God equips him to be a pastor, he would be disobedient to go be a politician. Somebody said, you ought to run for office. I said, that'd be a step down from my current position. So quit trying to find this magical unicorn, Sasquatch, perfect, you know, unknown, unable to find. I mean, you're not going to find that. Instead, you find imperfect people whom God has put together at the perfect time to accomplish His purpose. And Samson is that guy. Samson always gets a bad rap. I don't know how many sermons I've heard on Samson, but here's what they've all done. Every sermon I've heard, never been a series. Samson's life takes up four chapters of the book of Judges. Have you ever heard a four-part series preached on Samson? You've always heard one sermon on Samson. And everything's compressed into one sermon. And here's what happens. Samson's this really bad guy, and at the end he finally figures it out. That's not the case. Samson is not a perfect guy, but he's not nearly as bad as every preacher I've heard preach him to be. So, we're going to take our time. We spent a week looking at his revelation. Just the prophecy and his coming to his mom and dad in chapter 13 last week. Now we're going to look at his rejection. And all the time that I've studied Samson, I have, growing up in Baptist Sunday schools, I have always heard about the miraculous things that Samson did. What I never heard about was what you and I are going to talk about tonight. The in-between verses. Remember him killing that lion with a bare hand? You remember him killing the 1,000 Philistines with the jawbone of an ass? A donkey jawbone? You remember that? You remember him slaying the Philistines hip and thigh with a great slaughter? What about all the in-between verses? What do they talk about? All of them talk about the exact same thing, Samson being rejected. So we're going to focus our time on not only Samson's rejection, but the rejected verses and sermons about Samson. All right? Let's look at them individually. Verses 1 through 3, you will notice the rejection of his parents. His parents reject his choice for a wife. Interesting to me. Look at verses 1 through 3. And Samson went down to Timnath and saw a woman in Timnath of the daughters of the Philistines. And he came up and told his father and his mother and said, I have seen a woman in Timnath of the daughters of the Philistines. Now, therefore, get her for me to wife. Then his father and his mother said unto him, is there never a woman among the daughters of thy brethren or among all my people that thou goest to take a wife of the uncircumcised Philistines? And Samson said unto his father, get her for me, for she pleaseth me well. Every commentary you read on this talks about Samson looking not by faith, but by sight. He saw a good-looking woman and he wanted to marry her. Hey, I did that. Was I wrong? She might have been wrong to marry me, but was I wrong to marry her? Who wants to go marry an ugly woman? Anybody? Quit beating Samson up for seeing a good-looking girl and saying, I want to marry her. Well, he was forbidden to marry her. The Bible says that they cannot marry. Wait a minute. Go down that list. Go down that list that God told them they couldn't intermarry with. Here's what you'll find. The Philistines are not on the forbidden list. How do you know that, Brother Harold? The Philistines weren't here when they entered the land. The Philistines came here from another region. They weren't expressly forbidden from marrying the Philistines. Now, I'll grant you, it's not the smartest thing to do to go and marry a Philistine. Okay? But it's not forbidden either. It's not forbidden either. Samson finds a wife that he wants to marry, and he tells his mom and dad, I want to marry her, and they say, oh, come on, son, you can do better than that. Interesting, the first time that we see Samson talk, the people disagreed with his idea. Okay? Do you notice that? You may say it makes sense too, that's better too, it doesn't matter. It's not forbidden to marry a Philistine. It's forbidden to marry a Moabite. It's forbidden to marry an Ammonite. It's forbidden to marry Amalekites. It's forbidden to marry the seven nations that surrounded Israel, but the Philistines are not in the group. So there's nothing against the laws of God for him to marry her. As a matter of fact, his mom and dad work in that town. If it's so bad that he marry a Philistine, why are you working among them? If it's so bad to marry a Philistine, why do you allow him to live in your town? There's a lot going on here that nobody wants to address. Huh? Verse 4? Yeah. But here's what happens. He picks a wife and mom and dad don't like her. Now, they cave in and they go ahead and they get this wife. They go ahead and say, okay, it's fine, we'll let you have her. And so they arrange a marriage. That leads to the next rejection. The rejection of his friends. If you look in verse 10 down through verse 18... you're going to notice that there's a wedding feast taking place. And the wedding ceremony is for the girl that Samson fell in love with at first sight. And the wedding's been arranged, and here's what happens. The people in the wedding get mad at Samson and reject him. Let's read it together, verses 10 through 18. So his father went down unto the woman, and Samson made there a feast, for so used the young men to do. And it came to pass when they saw him that they brought 30 companions to be with him. So think about it this way. You're having a wedding. You probably had a best man and a bridesmaid or a maid of honor. And then you had groomsmen and bridesmaids, right? And if you had a fancy wedding, you had a couple of each. If you had a real big royal wedding, you had 12 of each, right? They had 30 of each. And this seven-day feast included 30 of Samson's friends that came there. You say, how do we know these were friends? Well, it says they were his companions that came down there to be at the festival with him. They were Philistines. They were Jews. They were probably a mixture of both because, let's be honest, the Bible says the Philistines controlled Israel at this time. They were under Philistine occupation, and they were friends with the Philistines, and the Philistines were friends with them. So, Samson said unto them, I will now put forth a riddle unto you, and if you certainly declare it with me within 7 days of the feast and find it out, then I will give you 30 sheets and 30 changes of garments. So this is a riddle, and this is a common thing, to tell a riddle or a puzzling story and try to get someone to pick out to answer it and make sense of it. So here's this riddle. Oh, he says, but if you get it right, I'll give each one of you a change of clothes and a pair of sheets. A change of clothes was probably the most expensive thing the average person owned. And he only had one. And if you had a change of clothes, a secondary garment to wear, and you could take your garments off and put on another garment, you were rich. Samson said, I'll give each one of my friends a garment if the 30 of you together can answer this. But if y'all can't, look at verse 14 or verse 13. But if you cannot declare it to me, then you shall give me 30 sheets and 30 changes of garments. And they said unto him, put forth thy riddle that we may hear it. Let me read you that last phrase again. Put forth thy riddle that we may hear it. Let me read you that last phrase again. Put forth thy riddle that we may hear it. Every commentator says Samson was mean to do this. He shouldn't have done that. Nobody could afford 30 changes of garments. They were affording one change of garment each. If he lost, he was affording 30 changes of garments. And he offered a bet, and look what they said. We'll take it. Now you tell me who's dumb here. It ain't Samson. Samson ain't a bad guy. Samson made probably a drunken bet with these guys. He's a Nazarite. He's not supposed to drink, and to our knowledge, the Bible never records him drinking. But they're drinking. It's a wedding feast. That's what they do at wedding feasts. Jesus approved of drinking wine at wedding feast. If he didn't, he wouldn't have made wine. Okay? So he says, I got a riddle. If y'all can answer it, I'll give each one of you a change of clothes. If you can't answer it, all of you, each one of you, give me a change of clothes. They said, let's hear it. This was agreed to by both. Look. He said unto them, out of the eater came forth meat, and out of the strong came forth sweetness. And they could not for 3 days expound the riddle. Now what's he talking about? He's talking about the lion he killed. Remember after his mom and dad said no, he killed a lion. And then they went down and got the wife, and then they went back for the marriage, which was probably after a 10 to 12 month engagement period. So the carcass is laid out here. All the insides have rotted out. The old thick lion hide. I know none of you probably ever handled a lion's hide, but I have, and the leather's about that thick. And all the soft mass rots out underneath it. The bones stay, and the skin stays. So guess what you have? You have a tent the size of a lion. And that's perfect for bees to go up in and build a nest in and be sheltered by that leather hide. Nothing's going to go up and chew on a dead lion because no one wants to risk it being asleep. Same thing for a bear carcass. I laid the bear carcass out where we dumped dead cows on the property. I come back the next day thinking, boy, I bet everything in the country's been out here eating. That bear carcass rotted. Dogs don't want to go up and start sniffing around on a bear. So he goes back and he finds in this lion's carcass, honey. Out of the eater came meat, food. Out of the strong came sweetness. They're never going to figure this out. This is such a bizarre event. No way they're going to figure this out. But they said, yeah, let's bet. Let's hear what you got. 3 days they couldn't get it. And it came to pass on the seventh day that they said unto Samson's wife, entice thy husband, that we may declare unto us the riddle, lest we burn thee and thy father's house with fire. Have ye called us to take that we have? Is it not so? So these are his friends who wanted to bet, and they've been hounding his wife, or his engaged wife, all week long, trying to figure this out. 3 days went by, they couldn't get it. Then they start pestering her. Now it's day seven. If they don't have the answer by tonight, each one of them is going to go home naked. So instead of saying, could you talk to Samson about it? They said, if you don't get the answer, we're going to burn your house down with you and your dad in it. What kind of friend Samson have? What kind of friend did he have? So we'll look at 16, 17 here in a minute. Look at 18. And the men of the city said unto him on the seventh day, before the sun went down, what is sweeter than honey and what is stronger than a lion? And he said unto them, if you hadn't plowed with my heifer, you had not found out my riddle. You know what the commentator said on this? I'm about ready to throw every judge's commentary I have in the trash. What a cruel, heartless man calls his wife a heifer. I swear a bunch of feminists wrote my commentaries. I agree, you shouldn't call your wife a heifer. But he's not calling her a heifer because he thinks she's a cow. He's saying, if you hadn't came and used my wife to get your answer and his wife, you know what a heifer is? It's a cow who has not had a calf. This is his engaged wife that he has not known yet. If you hadn't came and utilized my wife and threatened her and her family and made my wedding feast miserable and caused her to cry all the time, you wouldn't have got your answer. Samson's friends rejected him and threatened to kill his wife and her family and burn their house down to keep from paying the bet they made. That's right. Any questions about what happened here? Is Samson a bad guy for saying if you hadn't flailed with my heifer? No. He's talking to them in hyperbole. Here's another thing people say about Samson. Samson, just a big, big, strong meathead with no sense. Seems to me he can talk in riddles and parables. Seems to me he can teach truth through storytelling. I think Samson's a pretty smart guy, to be honest with you. His only flaw is he gets love struck. Well, I wonder why he gets love struck. I'll tell you why. Because everybody he encounters rejects him. Everybody he encounters rejects him. Any questions about the rejection of his friends? Yes, Rendell. Right. When I read that, I never thought about his wife being offended, but I remember taking my wife when we were dating to introduce her to a friend of mine, an older gentleman that was a preacher. And I walked up and I said, hey, Dan, I got somebody I want you to meet. He turned around and he said, who's this young filly? And I introduced him. We talked for a moment and we left. You know what she said? He called me a horse. And I'm like, but it's just an expression of speech. A filly is a young mare. He's not calling you a horse. But if you're upset about that, you're missing the greater point in the story. These people threatened to burn down his fiance's house during the wedding festival. What kind of friend does that? Any questions before we move on? I kind of skipped ahead. Any questions about the rejection of his parents? I'm going to be honest with you, parents. You get about 18 years to raise your kids, whether you like it or not. But you can't prevent them from marrying who they want to once they become an adult. If you're the strongest man in the world and you want to marry somebody from Timnath, it's going to happen whether mom and dad says yay or nay. Okay, let's look at the rejection of his wife. His wife, during all of this, rejects him as well. Look at verse 16 and 17. And Samson's wife wept before him and said, doest thou hate me and lovest me not? Thou hast put forth a riddle unto the children of my people and hast not told it me. And he said unto her, behold, I have not told it to my father nor my mother, and shall I tell it to thee? He said, I haven't even told my mom and dad. And the Bible records when he killed the lion, he didn't even tell them. I'm going to venture to say Samuel did a lot of great and amazing feats that the Bible doesn't tell us about either. Here's how she responded in verse 17. And she wept before him the 7 days. She starts crying as soon as he makes the bet. For 3 days, they couldn't come up with an answer, so they start threatening her. And she just cries and cries and cries and cries all the more. And while the feast lasted, it came to pass on the 7th day that he told her, because she lay sore upon him, and she told the riddle to the children of her people. He finally broke down on day 7 and told her. And what did she do? She ran down and told them. She sold him out. She rejected her husband. She chose the children of her people over him. Samson, when he's not doing great and amazing feats of killing Philistines and lions and all kinds of tearing gates off of cities, when he's not doing all that kind of stuff, he's being rejected by everybody that he gets close to. Any questions about the rejection of his wife? Pretty simple. Pretty simple. Let's look at the rejection of his father-in-law. Look at that last verse in verse 20. Samson, after being rejected by everybody, he has to come up with 30 changes of clothes and 30 bed sheets. So he goes down where they're having battle in Eklon and he kills 30 Philistines and takes their clothes off and goes and pays his debt. So what can we say about Samson? He's a man of his word. If he made a bet and he lost, even if you cheated, he still paid. He's not that bad of a guy if you read the verses that people don't preach on. Verse 20. He goes down and he pays his debt, verse 20 of chapter 14. But Samson's wife was given to his companion, whom he had used as his friend. The way that's worded in the Hebrew is hard to translate, but it means they gave him to the best man. The guy who he picked to be his closest companion is who his father-in-law gave his wife to. Now, do you know what happens on day 7 of the feast? you get married to your wife. But Samson owed a debt at sundown, so he had to go collect 30 pieces of clothing. And he went and collected 30 pieces of clothing. And then he came back and paid his debt. So he technically got married, but he never consummated his marriage. He never slept with his wife. And since he wasn't there that night, the dad said, well, we've already had a wedding. Even though you wasn't the guy that said, I do, I'd rather you marry my daughter than him. You want to talk about wife swap? We're talking after the wedding vows. What kind of a father-in-law is that? Doesn't even wait till you get back. Doesn't even give you some time to cool off. Verse 1 of chapter 15. But it came to pass within a while after. Within a while after. It gives you the idea that it didn't take too long. A couple days. Week maybe. At the time of wheat harvest, Samson visited his wife with a kid. And he said, I will go into my wife, into the chamber, but her father would not suffer him to go. So he's going back down there. He's taking the kid. He's going to say, I'm sorry. The kid is a way of an offering sacrifice, or not a sacrifice, but an appeasement offering. It'd be the equivalent of bringing your wife flowers. Be the equivalent of bringing her something, some piece of jewelry. He's bringing her a gift to say he's sorry. And he's going to go into the bedroom with her and consummate his marriage. But his father-in-law said, oh no, you can't do that. And he said, verse 2, I verily thought that thou hadst utterly hated her. Therefore I gave her to thy companion. Is not her younger sister fairer than she? Take her, I pray thee, instead of her. He gave away the daughter the night of her wedding. Why don't you ask me if I thoroughly hate her and don't plan on coming back? Why don't you give me time to file for a divorce if that's what we're going to do? Why don't we go through the legal process of dissolving the marriage? What's the father-in-law doing? He's rejecting Samson. And I think if Samson probably hadn't picked up a fence post and broke it over his knee, he probably wouldn't have offered the younger daughter. No, the fence post broke over his knee's not in the text. Some of you went like, what? I didn't read that. Samson has a reputation. You know, it was known in Dan between Eklon and Zorah that the Spirit of God came upon him and he did strong things. So he shows up at his father-in-law's house. I'm here to get my wife. We're going on our honeymoon. I'm sorry. Here's a young goat. Oh no, it's too late. She married the best man at the wedding. I'll guarantee you, if I was Samson, I'd have tore the rose bushes out of the flower bed and threw them out in the street. I would have done something because I'd be strong enough to do it. He says here, isn't the younger sister better looking, fairer? Isn't she fairer than the one you wanted to marry? Samson wanted to marry this woman because he fell in love with her when he first saw her. Father-in-law rejects him. And Samson is not just a man after a woman. He's a man that wants to love his wife. And he's not just looking for a wife. He's looking for the wife. So he turns down the younger, prettier sister and says, no, that's not what I came here for. Any questions about the rejection of his father-in-law? That's what men did when they got scared. Remember Lot and Sodom and Gomorrah? We want to sleep with them two angels that came by today. I'm not here, take my daughters. Let's look at, if there's no more questions about his father-in-law's rejection, let's look at the rejection of his in-laws. And it's not his in-laws rejecting him. That's already occurred. It's the Philistines rejecting his in-laws. Look at verse 6. You know what happened in between? Samson caught 300 foxes, tied a slow-burning torch to two of them's tail, and turned them loose. So he turned loose 150 pairs of foxes with a slow-burning torch tied to their tail. In wheat harvest. When there were shocks of grain standing together and standing grain that hadn't been combined yet. And they just turned them loose in the fields. You don't even smoke a cigarette in a wheat field. That stuff's powder house dry. That's what it has to be when you cut it and how you thresh it. You don't mess around with that. A hay baler can make a few sparks and burn a whole wheat field down. Imagine what two foxes tied together with a torch between them can do. So he does that. Look what the Philistines, verse 6. Then the Philistines said, Who hath done this? I want you to notice the answer. They answered, Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite. The son-in-law. Everybody in Timnath considered Samson to be a married man. You know why? He was legally married to the woman whom her dad gave away. And everybody there agreed with it. Because he had taken his wife and given her to his companion. And the Philistines came up and burnt her and her father with fire. Now Samson loved his wife. And he wanted to teach the Philistines a lesson for the way they treated him. And the Philistines, instead of retaliating towards Samson, they retaliated to the people who decided to marry Samson. And then unmarried Samson. And so the Philistines killed his wife and his wicked father-in-law. Everything Samson gets involved in, what? It gets rejected. Anything that Samson falls in love with, it gets pushed aside. Every time Samson finds what he's looking for, the people there don't want anything to do with him. That's Samson's life. I'm going to tell you, if Delilah didn't come along and give him some attention, if any other woman did, he would have fallen in love with her by the time she comes around. Questions about the rejection of the Philistines? I can't blame the Philistines for killing his in-laws. They're wicked people. They're so wicked, even the Philistines said, you deserve to die. But I would have went and talked to Samson about it before I killed his lawful wife. If Samson wanted to kill the Timnite, you think he could have done it? Yeah, he could have killed the best man. Samson chose not to do those things. So, he gets mad because they did that. He goes and kills a bunch of Philistines because he's paying them back for the way they treated his wife and bad father-in-law. Philistines go and declare war on Judah. And Judah says, why'd you declare war on us? And he said, because we want Samson. So Judah says, okay, we'll go get Samson. Verses 9 through 14 is the rejection that Samson has from Judah. Look with me at verse 9. The Philistines went up and pitched in Judah and spread themselves in Lehi. And the men of Judah said, why art thou come up against us? And they answered, to bind Samson are we come up, and to do to him as he hath done to us. Then 3,000 men of Judah went up to the top of the rock of Etam and said to Samson, knowest thou not that the Philistines are rulers over us? What is it that thou hast done to us? And he said unto them, as they did unto me, so I have done unto them. Time out for just a moment. In verse 11, the children of Judah said, don't you know the Philistines are our boss? I got a question for Judah right here. You ready? Don't you know Samson's on your side? Anytime Samson gets mad at the Philistines, he wipes them out. Why do you still accept the Philistines as your rulers? Why don't you get behind Samson and wipe them off the face of the earth? Why don't you push them out into the Mediterranean? Why, when given a choice between the Philistines or God's chosen leader, did you choose to go arrest the leader? Did you ever think about that? God's give this man enormous strength to do things that are not humanly possible. This guy barehanded kills lions, barehanded kills thousands of Philistines, barehanded. Why don't we show back up on the battlefield and say, you want him? Come get him. And we're with him. You know why the Philistines went and attacked the men of Judah? Because they knew the men of Judah did not accept Samson as their leader. They were gathering support from his own people to have him removed from office. There's a problem when you try to remove God's man from the office God appointed him to. I like Samson's answer. He said, verse 12, and they said unto him, we are come down to bind thee, that we may deliver thee into the hand of the Philistines. And Samson said unto them, swear unto me that ye will not fall upon me yourselves? And they spake unto him, saying, No, but we will bind thee fast and deliver thee into their hand. But surely we will not kill thee. And they bound him with two new cords and brought him up from the rock. Notice they don't want to go up and physically take Samson. They won't talk to him. They don't want to fight Samson any more than the Philistines want to fight Samson. But they know it's the only way they can keep from going to war with all the Philistines is to go fight against Samson. And Samson says, all right, as long as you promise not to kill me, I'll let you bind me and hand me over to him. Samson does not want to fight his own people. And if he can get their pledge not to kill him, he's willing to be handed over prisoner to the Philistines because he knows once he gets in the proximity of the Philistines, he's going to kill them. Look at verse 14. And when he came to Lehi, the Philistines shouted against him, and the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him. And the cords that were upon his arms became as flax that was burnt with fire, and the bands loose from off his hands. As soon as the Philistines got a hold of him, here's what happened. Those cords that looked like they had him bound became as flax burned by fire. In other words, they just wilted, fell away from him. The binds on his hands that had his hands, they just fell off. It's like nothing. It's like Incredible Hulk. Do you remember watching Incredible Hulk? Not this new junk. The old Lou Ferrigno stuff. Lou's in the hospital, by the way. He's not doing good. Back then, he was just the average guy until he was needed. And then he would hawk out. Samson looked like the average guy. Bound, he appeared to be subdued. So Samson was rejected by Judah. Judah chose to serve the Philistines rather than line up under the service of Samson. Any questions about the rejection of Samson by his parents, his friends, his wife's family, his father-in-law, and Judah? Did you ever hear a sermon on the rejection of Samson? Did you ever heard a Bible study on the rejection of Samson? Just heard how strong he was and how dumb he was. Actually, I think he's smarter than we gave him credit for. Now, I want you to take notice of the places that what happens after each group rejects Samson. I never thought about this until I started looking at all the times that Samson was rejected. But I want us to go back. Remember when his parents said, she's not the right woman for you? Look at the very next verse. Rob pointed it out earlier, verse 4. It says, but his father and his mother knew not it was of the Lord that he sought an occasion against the Philistines, for at that time the Philistines had dominion over Israel. It was God's doing that Samson fell in love with the Philistine. Let me tell you what that means. It doesn't mean it was the most righteous and holy thing to do. It means that God caused him to fall madly in love with that girl and overlook all of her flaws and all the flaws of her family so that the Philistines would stir up Samson so he'd quit being their friend and become their enemy and the leader of Israel. You know what happened when mom and dad said no? God said, yes, that's my man. That's the way it's going to go. God rubber stamped it and went on with his plan. Right? Okay, quit beating Samson up for falling in love with a girl when he was affected by God to do so. Evidently, you're smarter than God if you think Samson was all wrong here. Bible says he'd be doing just what God wanted him to. We're going to get there, Rob. Every one of these. I'm doing this because it needs to be told, and I'm glad we're recording it because it needs to be down where other people can learn this. I mean, all my life I've heard about judges. I've been in a Baptist church 9 months before I was born. I've heard all these stories. My very first sermon was on Gideon. But I've never looked at judges in the light that we are in this study. And my eyes have been open to some things I was ignorant about up till now. Not that I know it all now, but I'm looking at some stuff nobody else is pointing out. And I don't think I'm off my rocker either. I think I'm on to something. As soon as this happens, mom and dad say no. God says, wait a minute, that's what I wanted to. How do we know that God's will was upon Samson? Look at verse 5. when Samson went down with his father and mother to Timnath and came to the vineyards of Timnath, behold, a young lion roared against him. Now, people have said, what's Samson doing walking around a vineyard? He's not supposed to be eating grapes. It didn't say he ate grapes. I drove by Hiram Walker Liquor. I didn't have a drink, but I drove by. Look, it didn't say anything about him eating grapes or drinking wine. Timnath had vineyards. That's what they were known for. If he's marrying a girl from there, they're probably in that business. If his mom and dad are down there working, they're probably in that business. When he got down there, a lion showed up. Now, hey, wait a minute. If he's not doing the will of God, here's a perfect opportunity for God to get his attention and rein him back in. When a lion attacks you, it's a perfect chance for God to maul you within an inch of your life and go, now don't do that again. What happened? The lion came out and roared against him. You go home tonight, here's some homework for you. Get on YouTube and type in lion charges. Hunting lion charges. These lions are getting shot by high-powered rifles and a dead run, and they ain't even phasing them. They jump and grab a guy, knock him clean off his feet. There's guys shooting at them 3, 4, 5 times point blank. Them lions are just ripping them up. Samson ain't got a gun or any backup. He's just barehanded. Ta-da! Now, if he's not doing the will of God, and he's out of God's will, and he's out of line, and his mom and dad, he's not listening to him, here's God's chance to get him. What did God do in verse 6? The Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and rent him as he would have rent a kid. He wrung that lion's neck. I don't know if you've ever wrung a neck, but as a kid, my dad took me dove hunting, and I had a BB gun. He had a shotgun. And he'd knock him down, and we didn't have a Labrador, he had me. I'd run out in the field with my BB gun, and I'd run up about 3 foot from him, and I'd cock that, you know, Red Rider style. I'd cock that thing, and I'd shoot them birds, and they'd still be alive. He'd say, "Ring their neck, son," and I'd swing them old doves around and try to ring their neck. And I learned I got pretty good at that. By the end of dove season, boy, I could kill them. Imagine someone grabbing a lion by the nape of the neck and swinging that thing around till you snapped its neck. Very first deer I ever killed, I was 12. I was by myself. I was in Fort Chaffee, and it was closed. And I shot it with a .22. And I watched the movie Red Dawn, and they said if you ever shoot twice, they can pinpoint you. They know where you're at. So I didn't want to shoot that deer again, so I jumped on it. I'm 12. I never killed a deer before. But I watched a lot of karate movies. And they would grab people by the head and just break their neck. So I got this deer, and I got my arm under its chin, and I got a hold of its ears, and I'm going to break its neck. And I'm squeezing, I'm turning, I'm trying. I got this thing in a figure four leg lock. We rolled around 15 minutes. I said, I don't care if they find me. I got up and shot it again. Here's Samson, not with a young deer that's already been shot, with a grown lion, not with a gun, with his bare hands. If God did not want Samson and Timnath to get married, I'd say God had a perfect opportunity to stop it. What did God do? He rubber stamped it. Samson, got you right where I want you, son. Rejection number 2, his friends. What happened after the rejection of his friends? Verse 18. Of chapter 14. The men of the city said unto him on the seventh day before the sun went down. What is sweeter? Okay, verse 19, I'm sorry. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him. If Samson wasn't supposed to be down there getting married, if Samson was doing these people wrong, why did the Spirit of the Lord come upon him? And he went down to Ashkelon and slew 30 men of them and took their spoil and gave change of garments unto them which expounded the riddle. And his anger was kindled, and he went up to his father's house. It would seem to me, if Samson was being mean to his friends, and they were trying to be nice to him, and he was cheating them, that God, at some point in time, during that fight with 30 grown men, would have said, "All right, Samson, I'm going to teach you a lesson." What did God do? He empowered Samson to compensate for the cheating that the guys, his friends, had done to him. Every time Samson is rejected, God says, that's my man, and stamps him. His wife rejected him. He was angry at her. It said there in verse 19 that he went to his house, his father's house, mad. Something happened while he was at his father's house, because chapter 15 begins with him returning with a gift. Now, it doesn't expressly say it, but I'm going to say it. It is the Spirit of God that helps us get over our grudges and our anger towards other people. It doesn't expressly say the Spirit of the Lord came upon him and granted him forgiveness and repentance towards his wife, but he went back within a short time and said, "I'm sorry." What was that? That was God saying, "Yes, your wife done you wrong, but you're going to go back and do what's right." God's stamp of approval. Not a big dumb meathead that can't think for himself. God's chosen man. Problems? Yes. God's choice? Still yes. What about his father-in-law? Remember his father-in-law in chapter 14, verse 20 through chapter 15, verse 2, gave his wife away. What'd Samson do? He went out and caught 300 fox. And evidently he did it in pretty short order, because it was wheat harvest when he went down to see his wife and found out she had been given to somebody else after they were married. And it was still wheat harvest because there was standing grain when he turned the foxes loose. I happen to know a thing or two about trapping foxes. I used to do a lot of trapping. I had modern steel traps, and I don't know of anybody, even in good fox country, that caught 300 with the entire winter to do so. You tell me how in the world a man catches 300 foxes. I know a thing or two about trapping. I know a thing or two about foxes. I kept some in cages to collect their urine for trapping. Do you know how hard it is to cage a wild animal in a steel welded wire cage? They will chew through anything. You can't tie the cage up with baling twine. They will chew through that. Everything has to be metal. Samson didn't have any metal cages. Every cage he had to have been wood, stone, or a pit of some kind. How does Samson catch 300 foxes? How does he take two foxes at the same time and tie their tail together? Who helped him? Nobody likes him. Everybody he's been around hates him. Huh? One who's been helping him all along? I know a thing or two about taking animals live. When you take them live, you bring them home. We use a pole, put around their neck, and choke them down. I've brought home live bobcats. But I've never had two live animals that were wild held down long enough to get out a piece of leather and tie around one's tail, tie around the other's tail, stoke up a fire here and light a torch and say, "There you go, boys." The Bible doesn't explicitly say it, but I'm going to assume, by the preponderance of the evidence, the Spirit of God came upon him when he caught these 300 fox and turned them loose. Father-in-law rejected him. Spirit of God says, "All right, son, you're still my man." Philistine said, "Who burned down our fields?" Said, "Well, it was Samson, and he only did it because his daddy-in-law gave his wife to his best man." What would you do in a situation like that? They said, "Those people are evil." And they went up there and they burned daddy-in-law and they burned his wife. Look at what Samson says in verse 7 and 8 of chapter 15. "And Samson said unto them, though ye have done this, yet will I be avenged of you, and after that I will cease." He said, "Now I'm going to have to kill you because you killed my wife and my father-in-law. If I wanted them dead, I'd have killed them myself. Though you did that, I'm going to avenge you. And then after I avenge you for what you've done to my wife and my father-in-law, as bad as they were, then I'm not going to attack you anymore." So what did he do? Verse 8, "He smote them hip and thigh with a great slaughter. And he went down and dwelt on the top of the rock of Etam." Samson said, "I'm only going to fight the Philistines one more time. And then I'm going to call it quits." You know what God said? "I'm not through with you." He gave Samson the strength to smite them hip and thigh. Now, hip and thigh is an expression. We might say tooth, fang, and claw. You ever heard that? That doesn't mean that people are out there nyah, 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 biting on them and chewing on them. "I got you by the fangs." It's an expression to say, He not only killed them, he crushed them. He broke them. Where did he get that strength? Go out as one man and slaughter a great multitude. God. Every time Samson gets rejected, God says, you're still my choice. Don't worry that these people reject you. Don't worry that these people reject you. Don't worry that these people reject you. I'm going to empower you to do what I want you to do. So Samson goes out and revenges his wife and his father-in-law. And then he pulls out of public life. He says, I'm going to go up on the rock of Edom. And I'm just going to live up here by myself. I'm tired of mom and dad. I'm tired of the Philistines. My father-in-law's gone. My wife's gone. Judah hates me. I'm just going to go up here and be quiet and sit down by myself and not do anything. You know what God said? You are not your own. You belong to me. So God sends the Philistines not to the top of the rock of Edom to get Samson. God sends the Philistines to Judah. And the Judah says, what are you guys doing here? We don't want to fight. You're the boss. Uncle, uncle, uncle. As soon as they show up, they start crying uncle. He says, well, we came down to get Samson. They said, we'll go get him. So he goes up and he gets him. And what does Samson say? I don't want to kill my own people. I'm not going to fight Israel. He says, as long as you promise not to kill me, you can hand me over to the Philistines. They said, okay. So they bound him up and the Philistines are like, we got him, we got him, we got him. And they load him on the cart and look at what happens. In verses 15, let's go all the way through the end of the chapter. When them ropes fell off like burnt flax, in verse 14, verse 15, it says, he found a new jawbone of an ass. A new jawbone of an ass. That means it hadn't been dead long. You know what happens to bones when they lay out long? They get brittle. Animals chew on them, the calcium falls out of them, they go back into the earth like they were designed to. But a new jawbone still has the strength and the stoutness. And if you've ever looked at a horse, their heads are narrow. If you look at the head of a donkey, they've got big, blocky jaws. They got wide snouts. They got big heads. Their jawbones would be twice the size of a horse's. Ropes fall off. He's outnumbered over 1,000 to 1. Oh, look. A donkey died here at some point recently. He picks that thing up probably by the front teeth. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with anatomy here, but a donkey comes up and he's got a row of 4 to 6 teeth in the front for biting off grass. And then the molars are in the back. And then he has a break where he has no teeth. This is where the bit and the bridle would go, right through here. And so he can grab this by the narrow front near the front teeth and have the big weighty end with the what's that kind of joint called? The hinge joint in the back and the molars. He's got him a natural made club. But it wouldn't have mattered if he'd have picked up a willow limb. The Spirit of the Lord was upon him. And with that jawbone, it says in verse 15, he took it and slew 1,000 men therewith. 1,000. Judah rejected him. What did God say? That's my boy. Stamp. And Samson, with the jawbone of an ass, heaps upon heaps. With the jawbone of an ass have I slain 1,000 men. And it came to pass when he had made an end of speaking that he cast away the jawbone out of his hand and he called the place Ramoth Lehi. And he was sore thirst. And he called unto the Lord and said, thou hast given me a great deliverance into the hand of thy servant. And now shall I die of thirst and fall into the hand of the uncircumcised? He said, God, have you rejected me that I die now after this great victory? What'd God say? No, I've never rejected you. Verse 19. But God clave out a hollow place, which was in, not the jaw, as the King James says, which was in the area, in the rock, and came out water thereout. And when he had drunk, his spirit came again, and he was revived, and he called the name of it En Hakkor, which is in Lehi to this day. And he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines 20 years. Every time Samson got rejected, what'd God say? Don't worry, stamp of approval. More spirit, more power, more victory every single time. Mom and dad, you're wrong. You could do better. God, no, it's my guy. It's all right. This is the way we've got it planned. When God chooses someone to do this, He doesn't give them a blanket, get out of jail free card to go do whatever they want. And to paint Samson as a drunkard because he walked by some vineyards and got attacked by a lion is ludicrous. If Samson was out of line, he wouldn't have beat the lion. To say that Samson was out of line in making this bet with his friends about the riddle, he wouldn't have got the power of God upon him to go kill 30 Philistines and pay his debt. If he was out of line in the way he treated his wife, he wouldn't have went back and asked forgiveness and brought a gift. If he's out of line in the way that he was dealing with the rejection of his father-in-law, he wouldn't have been able to catch 300 foxes, tie their tails together and burn the land of the Philistines down. If he was out of line with the way the Philistines handled his in-laws, he wouldn't have went out and slayed them hip and thigh. If he was out of line in the way he handled Judah, he wouldn't have killed 1,000 with the jawbone of an ass. If Samson was wrong in all this, God was wrong to allow it to keep happening. Well, why did God allow it to keep happening? Why did God keep empowering him? Because Samson was doing what God wanted him to do. Well, when does Samson ever get out of line and God get his attention? When he gets his hair cut by Delilah. Up until this point, you're reading into the story if you're trying to paint him out to be a bad guy. Up to this point, you're on the rejectors category, and you're wrong. Now, when he says, I'm a Nazarite, and if I cut my hair, I'll lose all my strength. And he cuts his hair. She cuts his hair. And he runs out there, and he doesn't have any strength. That's when Samson did wrong. Now, if we wrote your life story down, would we only record one thing that you did wrong? If we wrote your life story, have you only made one major wrong decision? I'd say overall, Samson ain't the bad guy that Baptist preachers paint him out to be. I'd say he ain't the dummy that they try to make him out to be. I'd say that for 20 years, he was right. And for a number of those years, the people rejected him, even though he was God's leader. And it's not until his latter days as judge that he falls and falters. We'll look at that after the first of the year. Any questions about this tonight? Any questions? Anybody still think he's stupid and wrong? What a dummy. And oh God, you know, needs to line him out. Well, that's God's plan. He falls in love with the Philistine and he gets treated like the way the Philistines are treating Israel. But you can't say what Samson was doing was contrary to God's plan. Everything Samson did was perfectly according to the will of God. Not the permissive will of God, the will of God. But, you know, it ain't that we want our kids to grow up to be like Samson. It's that we need to quit calling Samson the bad guy because he wasn't. And I think if you'll look at some of your elected leaders, not all of them, but some of them, yeah, you can find some reasons to say, you know, I don't think that guy's saved. But overall, not a bad leader. Overall, he's doing what's in the best interest of his country. Whether it's a congressman, whether it's a local legislator, it doesn't matter. You've got to quit grading these guys on would they be your pastor. You wouldn't pick Samson as your pastor. They didn't pick Samson as their pastor. But God picked Samson as their leader. And he did a great job.